But now we're going to talk science. And tonight's scientist is a former, retired, Met Service severe weather meteorologist, Eric Brenstrom, who's been keeping an eye on world weather patterns. And he joins me now in our Wellington studio. Kia ora, Eric.
Kia ora, Karen.
Well, this is all going to be news to me about Sahara dust. Number one.
Sahara dust is a surprise the first time I heard about it to me, because you think the Sahara is a long way away from the Caribbean and the United States. But some of it comes across every year. And in fact, it's important for the ocean, because a component of the dust is iron, which is nutrient to help things like phytoplankton grow in the ocean. So it's actually got, you know, a positive aspect. But what they've had recently in the end of June was the worst outbreak that they've detected since they had a satellite measuring this back in about 2002. And the dust is very fine and therefore a problem for people when they breathe in, damaging to the lungs, and especially if you've got people already sick with COVID-19, the dust just makes everything worse. So that's been going on. It's died away, but they do expect more outbreaks. This is the month when it happens, but probably not as bad as the one they just finished. But one of the things that interests me is when people put cores through the ocean floor, looking at what's happened over the last hundreds of thousands of years, they find that the dust comes and goes and comes and goes. And it reflects this thing that they've found out about, that the Sahara used to be green if you go back all 6,000-7,000 years. Not in its entirety, but it had a lot more rain than today and a lot more greenery. And, you know, they found things like places where there are rock paintings by people who used to live in the Sahara showing crocodiles and hippopotamus and people herding cattle and stuff like that. So it's an interesting phenomenon. It's been going on, you know, for millennium, and it's a lot worse now than it used to be. And that's one of those things that comes back to the way the sun goes around, the way the Earth goes around the sun. Little variations in the Earth's orbit alter the quantity of sunlight coming in and change the weather.
It's not that long ago, 6,000 years, that the Sahara was green, is it?
No, it's not. And it's fascinating, all the different sources of information. I think the Americans put up some satellites a few decades ago that could had radars on that could penetrate through dry sand, and they were able to trace a whole lot of riverbeds that used to be operating in that area. And they think when the Sahara was drying out, the people largely moved into the Nile Delta, and that sort of gave rise to the beginnings of the great civilizations of Egypt.
Gee, so what you're saying is the Sahara dust, it's part of the Earth's natural cycle. It's there for a reason.
Well, it's there because you've got strong winds at times, and that's the reason this one was particularly bad, was the easterly winds on the equator side of the subtropical anticyclone were a lot stronger than average, because the anticyclone was stronger than average. So that made this outbreak particularly bad. It's been going on for ages, and as I said, it's beneficial to the ocean in terms of the bottom of the food chain, but not good for people to breathe in.
And so what are they doing about it in the US? Is there some sort of alert level that...
Yet another reason to wear a mask, I think.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. So, you know, you wouldn't think when you're in the USA that you're breathing in Sahara dust.
No. But there's an interesting thing too with the way that it helps the phytoplankton grow. There's another really interesting phenomenon there that...
In the sea.
The phytoplankton have a chemical inside them which stops the salt water penetrating their cells. But when they get nibbled by zooplankton, some of that chemical gets into the water where it becomes a thing called dimethyl sulfate. And when that gets into the air through breaking waves, that becomes condensation nuclei for water droplets that form clouds. So in a maritime country like New Zealand, about half the cloud droplets have formed around a tiny, tiny piece of salt derived from dimethyl sulfate, which comes from the phytoplankton.
Gee, that's a great fact. All right, so we move on to hurricanes and Atlantic hurricane season, more active than average.
Yes, it's forecast to be one of the most active on record because the oceans are much warmer than average, and not just the surface but to some depth. What can happen with a hurricane is that the strong winds mix the ocean, so that if there's cooler water 10 or 30, 50 metres below the surface, then that cooler water will act as a brake on the development. But if the water's warm at depth, warmer than average, then that makes the hurricanes worse. So what they've been having so far is not quite hurricane force. They've had, just the other day, 9th of July, they had their sixth tropical storm for the season, the sixth one that they gave a name to. It was called Faye. So that was on the 9th of July, and usually the sixth storm of the season doesn't occur till something like the 8th of September. So it's much earlier than average. Actually, the effect of the dust is to slightly block sunlight so that it cools the sea surface a little bit. So the dust has been helping slow things down a little bit. The Sahara dust, yes. But as we get into the peak time, which is August, September, they are expecting some very serious hurricanes to make landfall in America. And we have seen in recent years some terrific damage. And tragically, there may be repeats of that, interestingly enough, in the run-up to the election.
Gee, and so this is something, this hurricane season, is it shifting exponentially as we go through the years?
There's been changes noted in the Atlantic, and that's that the hurricanes are getting more damaging, more energetic. They also are reaching their peak at a latitude further away from the equator than they used to be. So, in other words, they're penetrating further northwards in their hemisphere, and that's given them the opportunity to do much more damage because they're reaching the coast of America when they're stronger than you might have found on average in the past.
And also, you talked about the election, but also with COVID-19, you know, that's going to make life very difficult for people with any kind of hurricane like that, any storm like that approaching.
Absolutely, because, you know, they move millions of people out of the way once they have worked out which part of the coast these things are going to strike. So that means you've got these people crowded into places like school halls and other public places, you know, with beds on the floor just a metre or two apart. So if anyone's mixed up in all that with COVID-19, it's an incredibly easy way to spread it to other people. So I think the health people in the States are very concerned that these sorts of disasters will be absolutely terrible for spreading COVID-19.
How many storms did you say that, you know, on average, do we have a year in that hurricane season?
Well, in the North Atlantic, I'll have to scratch my memory a bit, but I do know that one of the worst years, and they worry that this could be like this, had something like 30 or 29, because they name them with the first one starts with the letter A and the second one B and so forth. And some time ago they had a season where they went right through their list of proper names, and so they then had to use the names from the beginning of the Greek alphabet to sort of pad it out.
Is that
right? Yeah, but I think maybe they average about 16 a year, 16 named storms, you know, of which maybe five or six are major hurricanes. So they're looking at something, you know, well above average.
So you're saying at the beginning of the season, the first one starts with an A, and they might recycle that name. I see with Edward. The French for Edward. He's been used quite a few times.
What happens when you get a hurricane that does terrific damage? They then retire the name.
Oh, okay.
So yes, names will be recycled. But really big ones, like, for example, in New Zealand, Bowler, I don't think we'd use that name again. And in the States, they've retired names like Andrew and Hugo. So really, really damaging ones, they take the name out of circulation.
Well, that's a good idea, because it would just serve to frighten people, wouldn't it?
Not so much that. I think it can lead to some confusion, you know, with historical things. I mean, it's good that people are frightened of these storms. You know, the threat from these things is very real, and I guess as a forecaster or an ex-forecaster, I would like people to be frightened of hurricanes. You should be.
What's the worst one in your history?
I think they had some humongous ones in the 30s in the United States when forecasting wasn't well developed, so they didn't see them coming. So I think there was a time when they had a railway line on trestles through parts of the islands off the coast of Florida, and a train full of workers who were doing depression jobs, constructing this and that. That train was caught on the trestles when the sea just came over it, and the death toll was in the hundreds. The worst one in New Zealand, in my books, would be there was a storm in 1936, and it pretty much messed up the entire North Island. Every major river in the North Island came into flood, so you had bridges destroyed, roads and railways undercut. Maybe something like 1 million trees came down. One of the things they do is the low pressure in the centre lifts the sea level, and so we had coastal flooding in a lot of places where the sea came onto the land. Actually, worldwide, that phenomena is meant to take about 90% of the death toll comes from the sea being lifted up and moving onto the land, which is in the past in places like Bangladesh and India killed, you know, multiple hundreds of thousands of people in single storms. Although what they've done in recent years in that part of the world is they've built these concrete structures where the ground floor is like just concrete pillars so the sea can pass underneath, and they get everyone in the village into the upper stories, and then the ocean just goes underneath them. No one gets hurt, but their property gets damaged. So they had a big cyclone a month or so ago in the top northeast corner of India, and I think the death toll was only a little over 100 compared to, you know, multiple thousands in the past.
I'm talking to retired Met Service severe weather meteorologist Eric Brenstrom about things that are going on planet Earth right now. And Andrew's emailed Eric and said, dust from the Sahara Desert is a very important source of nutriment for the Amazon rainforest.
Yeah, that sounds entirely likely as well, yeah, because it's just down the road from the Caribbean. So it's, you know, it's interesting how the world connects.
And I'm not sure if this is tongue-in-cheek or not, not knowing the names of these hurricanes, but Alex from Wellington says, will they use the name Donald for a major storm again?
Well, I couldn't possibly comment.
Okay, let's go to Japan, and they've had a lot of rain.
They have. It's a season when they get rain. There's a thing, a semi-stationary front called the, if I pronounce it properly, the Mayu Front, which is a boundary between very moist tropical air coming from the south and drier but warm air coming from the continent. And it moves very slowly poleward. And what can happen is you get centres of activity that run along the front to do with things in the upper air like the entrance zone to the subtropical jet stream. And these areas are particularly active areas of thunderstorms. So in the Japanese prefecture of Kumamoto, there were places that had over 1,000 millimetres of rain over 3 days, and some places 80 millimetres or more in 1 hour. So it leads to a terrific number of mudslides. And I think in total, Japan's had over 150 deaths. More than 1 million people moved out of the way, and a number of rivers have broken their banks. And the same thing affects China, where there's been flooding in the Yangtze, and I think one of the spokesmen from China said that they had 33 rivers in China had reached their highest level in history, which I take to mean going back thousands of years. So I think they've been making, you know, marks on rocks on the side of hillsides recording the high levels of their floods as well as the low levels. So it's ongoing in China. The rain's eased off in Japan, but again in China there's, I think, over 140 deaths and an estimated more than $12 billion US damage so far. But it's ongoing.
And what can they do to, you know, assuage the damage there? Not a lot, is there?
Well, that's an extremely interesting question, because what the Chinese have done is built the Three Gorges Dam, which is some way up the Yangtze. And some people say it's been very helpful because they've held back some of the floodwaters. But other people say it's been blocking the little floods and the middle-sized floods, which would otherwise scour out the bed of the Yangtze River below the dam. And so now that argument is that the bed of the river is too high, so that now that there's heavy rain in the lower parts, the lower parts of the Yangtze will overflow more easily. You can build stop banks, but some of these break. So it's a huge problem. And I did see a book once, which I haven't got around to reading yet, which suggested that dealing with floodwaters was actually the single biggest problem in Chinese history that governments are challenged by.
How long has that dam been there? Was it this century?
I think it's been there a couple of decades, more or less. But I could be wrong on that.
I'm just trying to remember a film I saw recently and whether it was on the building of that Three Gorges dam. Sorry, I think of the word.
Well, there was that trout fishing in Yemen where the lady in England got the engineers from the Three Gorges Dam to come and help build another dam in Yemen.
Yes, that wasn't that one. I did see that one. It was a pretty incredible film because the was in Chinese.
Right.
And the scenery was so spectacular.
Of course.
Quite something.
Yeah.
Obviously, there'd be a lot of documentaries that were done at the time.
Yes.
Oh, it was called Still Life.
Right.
Must watch it if you get a chance. It's a brilliant film.
I'll make a note.
All right, now we go from rain to heat in the Siberian Arctic.
Well, they've broken records. They reached 38 degrees on the 20th of June in a place in Siberia called Verkhoyansk, if I can pronounce it right. An average over the whole month of June, Siberia has been 5 degrees centigrade above average, which is an awful lot. And that's contributed to wildfires in the area, often started by lightning. And also this has helped trigger both a melting episode on the Greenland ice sheet and also melting of the sea ice in the Arctic, which is currently at its lowest level for this calendar date. The minimum will be reached sometime in September, and whether it reaches an all-time minimum is yet to be seen. But the sea route for ocean liners is now open along the coast of Russia, and we may yet see the Northwest Passage open up in the next couple of weeks.
That's phenomenal what's happening there, though, isn't it? And for those who live in the area, it's totally unprecedented.
Oh, absolutely. We've never seen anything like this before. The heat there is increasing faster than almost anywhere else in the world. And, of course, it has all those other consequences that as you melt the permafrost, your infrastructure starts to collapse. So I think there was a very bad oil leak at some Russian facility 2 or 3 weeks ago because with the permafrost shifting, the pipelines were cracking and breaking. And I've seen photos of roads that just disintegrate. And they talk about the thing called the drunken forest, where trees start to fall over and lean sideways. So the changes are huge. They're affecting wildlife. And there was a thing going on a few years ago where as the permafrost was melting, methane was breaking out, almost exploding out of the ground, and you're getting these strange craters in the northern tips of the land as it goes into the Arctic. So you're a whole raft of strange phenomena up there. But at the same time, people are now driving big ships through because the sea route from Europe to Japan is less than half of what it is otherwise.
It's easier, gee. And as you were talking about with the 6,000 years ago, the Green Sahara, and being able to monitor that, has that ever been monitored in the Siberian Arctic? Did it ever have a different climate?
That's a good question. I think certainly, you know, the permafrost is more than it is now. And what we're seeing at the moment includes things like riverbanks eroding away and frozen mammoths are coming out. So, you know, you can point to that and say, well, it hasn't been this warm, you know, for at least 15 or 20,000 years since the mammoth last died. But, you know, the ancient history of Siberia I have yet to read about, but I'm sure it's interesting.
I'm sure that'll be next on your list.
Yes.
I have a text here for you, Eric. Does China have the equivalent of the hurricane system as to the USA?
That's a good question. The hurricanes that reach China, you know, have come across a lot of other people's territory first, so they will have been named not by the Chinese, but by the Philippines or the Indonesians. So the Chinese will be on the receiving end of hurricanes that have been named by somebody else, and they're pretty well forecast by the computers that we've got dealing with the weather now. And especially by the time they've reached the latitude of China, there's a lot less uncertainty about them. But they certainly can deliver terrific amounts of rainfall to China, and also do a lot of coastal damage with high seas and erosion.
Well, we're coming up to the 8 o'clock news, Eric, but just wanted to ask you, as a retired Met Service severe weather meteorologist, what do you do to fill your days now? Do you just keep an eye on the weather?
Well, I do. That's one of the things I do, especially so I can come and talk here. But yes. To do something completely different, I'm trying to improve my Spanish. So I've been spending a lot of time translating Spanish poetry.
Well, that took me by surprise. How good are you at it by now?
Look, you know, some poems are fairly straightforward and you end up with a result that sounds okay in English. And there are other ones where the word order's funny, or you haven't got quite the right word, or it was colloquial. So I end up with quite a few that I've got a rough idea what they're talking about, but I wouldn't want to show it to one of my friends. But, you know, maybe 20 or 30% I'd show to someone else and say, hey, look at this, it's pretty good.
Oh, that's a great hobby. Thanks so much. That was really interesting. Enjoyed talking to you tonight.
My pleasure.
That's Eric Brenstrom, and he's been keeping an eye on world weather patterns.